भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So we're reading from the 74th chapter, I think. Yes, the 74th chapter, and we're reading a lot of texts. Text 39 through 46. So let's chant them all together and chant the last one responsibly, because the last one is the one with the purple. So let's chant together. Bhagavan didanam shrutva dushaham tat sabhavada karnal vidayat nirjagmu sampantas chedi pangushu. Upon hearing such intolerable blaspheme of the Lord, several members of the assembly covered their ears and walked out angrily cursing the king of Chedi. Text 40. Nindam bhagavata shrindam tad parasya janasyava chato na paitiya sopi yat yada sukritachchita. Anyone who fails to immediately leave the place when he hears criticism of the Supreme Lord or his faithful devotee will certainly fall down bereft of his pious credit. Text 41. Tatak pandu sutta krudha matya kai kaya shrinjaya udha yudha samutashtu. Shishupala jighamsava. Then the sons of Pandu became furious, and together with the warriors of the Matsya, Kaikaya, and Srinjaya clans, they rose up from their seats with weapons poised, ready to kill Shishupal. Text 42. Tatashchai jasta asambranto jagrihe kadgakarmani Bhartayan Krishna Paksiyan Rajna Sadhasi Bharata. Undaunted, Shishupal then took up his sword and shield in the midst of all the assembled kings, O Bharat, and hurled insults at those who sided with Lord Krishna. Text 43. Tavat utaya bhagavan svanirvarya svayam rasa shira shuranta chakrena jahara patato ripo. At that point, the Supreme Lord stood up, and checked his devotees. He then angrily sent forth his razor-sharp disc and severed the head of his enemy as he was attacking. And there's a small purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains the Lord's action as follows. If Lord Krishna had done nothing, there probably would have been a savage fight on the sacrificial grounds, and thus the whole ceremony would have been drenched with blood, spoiling and the sanctified atmosphere. Therefore, in order to protect the Rajasuya sacrifice of Krishna's beloved devotee Yudhisthira, the Lord immediately severed Shishupal's head with his razor-sharp disc in such a way that not a drop of blood fell within the sacrificial grounds. Text 44. Sabta lola halob Shishupale hate mahan Tasyanuyayano bhutpa budhrudva jivatasina. Then Shishupal was thus killed, A great roar and howl went up from the crowd. Taking advantage of that disturbance, the few kings who were supporters of Shishupal quickly left the assembly out of fear for their lives. And a small, even smaller purport, the above translation is taken from Srila Prabhupada's Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, text 45, only two more. Chaya dehotitam jyotir vasudevam upasvishat pasyatam sarvabhutanam ulekva bhuvijatya. An effulgent light rose from Shishupal's body, and as everyone watched, entered Lord Krishna just like a meteor falling from the sky to the earth. Small purport. In this connection, the Acharya reminds us that Shishupal is actually one of Lord's eternal associates playing the part of a belligerent demon. Thus, to most observers, it appeared that Shishupal achieved the impersonal liberation of merging into Lord Krishna's bodily effulgence. In fact, after being liberated from his mortal frame, Shishupal returned to the side of his master, the Supreme Lord of the spiritual world. The following verse further explains this, and this will chant responsively, text 46. Janma Trayana Gunita Vaira Samrab Dhyadhyaya Jayang Tanmayatam Yato Bhavo Hi Bhavakaranam Janma Trayana Gunita Vaira Samrad Dhyadhyaya Jayang Tanmayatam Yato Bhavo Hi Bhavakaranam. Vaishnavas, Janma Trayanugunita Vaira Samrabdayadira Dayang Sanmato Bhavohi Bhavakaranam Janma Trayanugunita Vaira Samrabdayadira Dayang Tam Mayatam Yato Bhavo Hi Bhavakaranam. Vaishnavis, Janma Trayanugunita Vaya Samradayadira Dayang Tam Mayatam Yato Bhavo Hi Bhavakaranam. Janma, births. Chaya, three. Anugunita, extending through. Vaira, by enmity. Samrabdaya, obsessed. Dhirya, with a mentality. Jayan, meditating. Tadmayatam, oneness with him. Yata, attained. Bhava, one's attitude. He, indeed. Bhava, of rebirth. Karanam, the cause. Translation. Obsessed with hatred of Lord Krishna throughout three lifetimes, Shishupal attained the Lord's transcendental nature. Indeed, one's consciousness determines one's future birth. Purport. Shishupal and his friend Dantavakra, I thought this was a funny statement, who will be killed by Krishna in the 78th chapter, which is kind of silly. Actually, his death will be spoken about in chapter 78. He was killed a long time before that. Where previously Jaya and Vijaya, two gatekeepers in Vaikuntha, they were those two people. Because of an offense, the four Kumaras cursed them to take three births in the material world as demons. The first birth was as Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu. The second as Ravana and Kumbhakarna. And the third as Shishupal and Dantavakra. In each birth, they were completely absorbed in enmity toward the Lord and were slain by him. Srila Prabhupada explains the position of Shishupal as follows, quote, although Shishupal acted as the enemy of Krishna, he was not for a single moment out of Krishna consciousness. He was always absorbed in thought of Krishna, and thus he got first the salvation of Sayuja Mukti, merging into the existence of the Supreme, and finally became reinstated in his original position of personal service. The Bhagavad Gita corroborates the fact that one who is absorbed in the thought of the Supreme Lord at the time of death immediately enters the kingdom of God after quitting his material body, unquote. The third and seventh cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam elaborately describe the incident wherein the Lord's personal associates were cursed to come to the material world as his enemies. In this connection, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes the following verse from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 7th canto, 1st chapter, 47th verse. Vairanubandha tivrena dhyanen achyuta satmatam nitao punar hare parsvam jagmatur vishnu parsadau. These two associates of Lord Vishnu, Jaya and Vijaya, maintained a feeling of enmity for a very long time. Because of always thinking of Krishna in this way, they regained the shelter of the Lord, having returned home back to Godhead. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namane Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharane Nirvishesha Srimadi Paschacharya Sukhamani Mukam karati vachalam bhangam mangayate girim yatkritatam aham vande shri guru jivatanam. So here we are the day after the night before. Huge crowd. Looking at this story, I was thinking how amazing it was that Krishna is able to accomplish so many things at one time. And the purpose of this, the purpose of his appearance, the purpose of his leela, the purpose of this leela, and the purpose of his being able to carry out so many things at one time. Because what Krishna's activities, you know, he says in Bhagavad Gita, in text, in the fourth chapter and seventh and eighth verses, that he comes whenever there's a rise in demoniac personalities, and he comes to protect the devotees and kill the demons. But in the purport and in other places in Srila Prabhupada's books, he explains that that's not the only reason he comes. He actually comes to enliven the devotees, and the purport to the eighth verse in that fourth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, Prabhupada says the main reason he comes, the ultimate reason that he comes, is to help the devotees, to help the devotees in many ways. And one of the ways to help the devotees is to help them remember him. So it not only helps the person who's being helped in the immediate leela, but it helps eons of generations after that, because it gives us katha, it gives us something to talk about besides what's happening on Facebook and what's happening in the news. So, or what's happening in the Gramya and Kata. So we get pastimes to talk about, and those help us with the ultimate goal of taking shelter of Krishna. Now, sometimes we talk about surrender. We talk about surrendering to Krishna. But in the 66th verse of the Bhagavad Gita, who knows what that verse is? Savardhamam Purichaja Mam Ekam Sharanam Sharanam Raja. So Sharanam, actually, we could take it, and it's taken in the most usual translation as surrender. But when we think of surrender, you know, sometimes you think of like someone standing with their hands up in the air, I surrender. But usually when we have our hands up in the air, I surrender, it's because someone has a gun at our back. Right? Someone has a gun at our back. So therefore we surrender. So we surrender more to protect our back than to actually take shelter. But the intention of the surrender in this verse, Shedanam, means to actually take shelter. And take shelter has a more voluntary connotation than surrender. Surrender comes about when there's no alternative. You're licked, right? You see the material world, it's just too intense. You've tried and tried again, and now you're just beat up, exhausted, dragging on the floor, and now you surrender. And basically, the surrender, the impetus very often is, please get me out of the suffering. I can't stand it anymore. And Prabhupada characterizes that as the desire for liberation on the lowest level. But if you look at it as taking shelter, then when we take shelter for Krishna, we do it voluntarily. And we can be inspired to take shelter by other than material distress. We can be inspired to take shelter because of Krishna's sweetness, because we trust him, because we love him, because we've seen how he behaves towards his devotees and we're inspired by that. Because we've developed a loving relationship with him by chanting his name and his glories and by associating with his devotees and seeing how much they love him. And all those things inspire us to take shelter of him, to fall at his feet voluntarily, to tell him that whatever you do, like in the Shishastakam we chant, right? Even if you handle me roughly by your embrace or leaving me brokenhearted by not appearing before me, still you remain my Lord unconditionally. That's taking shelter. So Krishna inspires us to take shelter by doing things in his leelas. And we can hear about them. And through chanting his name and reading about him and associating with his devotees, we can develop a loving relationship with him. And that has nothing to do with our material need. It has nothing to do necessarily with whether we're rich or whether we're poor or whether we're in a powerful position or whether we're weak, whether we're hungry or whether we're fed, whether we're fat, skinny, whether we're American or Indian. It doesn't, all those criterion really doesn't matter. That's why Srila Prabhupada, he saw that food for life meant food for everyone. Prasadam for everyone. He didn't think that it meant prasadam for just poor people who were starving. He saw that everybody, whether they were millionaires eating in huge dining rooms with fancy dining room tables and, you know, elaborate foodstuffs, they needed prasadam. Just as much as everybody else needed prasadam. Of course, you know, he also said that no one should go hungry within 10 miles of any of our temples, because if you're starving, you can't worship Krishna. But on the absolute level, those people who are eating sumptuously, not prasadam, they're preparing a hellish situation for themselves, and it's no telling what their situation will be in future life. So Prabhupada saw everyone, poor or rich, strong or weak, whatever it was, they were all in need of Krishna's mercy. So Krishna comes in many, many different ways to facilitate us. And one of the ways he facilitates us is by doing things to other people which can inspire us. Srila Jiva Goswami, I was listening to a class by Bhujan Prabhu, and he made a comment that I thought was interesting. He quoted Srila Jiva Goswami as saying that bhakti begins with a doubt. And that doubt is, maybe this is real. Maybe Krishna is really God. And, you know, we go along worshiping Krishna all the time. We do the things we do in the material world, in the spiritual world. But somewhere in the back of our head, there's this doubt. I really kind of feel like I have to take care of business. Because if I don't take care of business, who's going to take care of business, right? So there's this, when the doubt shifts and it becomes, maybe this is real. Maybe Krishna is really God. Then bhakti begins. That was, I thought that comment was very interesting. So if we look here at this lila, this pastime of Shishupal and later Dantavraka, who's going to be killed in two chapters. We see that there's so many different angles to this lila, because first of all, Krishna keeps his agreement to the four Kumaras, which happened a long time before and is mentioned even in the Bhagavatam previously, where the four Kumaras were insulted by Jaya and Vijaya. And because they committed an offense to their devotees, Krishna personally took responsibility for that offense, because they were his employees, so to speak. And because they were working for him, he had to make good on their error. He had to, you know, give a good deal to the person who got the bum end of the deal, which was the four Kumaras. So the four Kumaras, they had already cursed Jayavijaya, and Krishna came out and said, you know, I take personal responsibility. But at the same time, Jaya and Vijaya were his devotees, so he gave them an ultimate, you know, a choice. He said, you can either stay out of the spiritual world for 7 births or 3 births, depending on your choice, or 6 births or 3 births. And you could either be a long time away as devotees or a short time away as not devotees, at least apparently not devotees. Because we know that they were always devotees. They, you know, here at the culmination of it, they were always devotees, but they took the position of being non-devotees. And because of Yogamaya, or because of Krishna's power, potency, and his desire to have a real experience with enmity, they were convinced that they were demoniac. And their inner core being, everything about them was fixed on this thought that they were Krishna's enemies. But in reality, they were always Krishna's devotees. It was all just like Mother Jasoda thought that Mother Jasoda was Krishna's mother, and she forgot that Krishna was God, right? When Krishna was eating dirt, she thought, oh my goodness, you're going to get sick eating dirt. And he said, I didn't eat dirt. And she said, I don't believe you. Open your mouth. So he opened his mouth, and she saw the universes inside. And then Krishna didn't like that, so he covered her over again. Nope, you're my mom. Forget about the universes inside. Better you just feed me. So this is a similar thing, that Krishna covered over these devotees so that they could fight well, because they wouldn't fight him if they were devotees. So in order to get them to actually get into it, he had to cover them over. And so that was the first thing, or two of the things he did. He satisfied the four Kumaras, and he fulfilled the commitment he had to Jaya and Vijaya that they would be 3 births only. So this was Shishupal's last time around as demon. And so Krishna took care of that. And he allows us as devotees to strengthen our attachment by becoming, you see the devotees in the assembly, their attachment to Krishna became fired up. They became protective of Krishna. They thought Krishna needs us to defend him, and they got all up and grabbed their arms, and they were ready to fight Shishupal, because their love for Krishna just became so strong, and their feeling as Kshatriyas to protect Krishna from the insults of Shishupal took over, and so they got up and they wanted to protect Krishna. And he even protected Shishupal. Not only did he protect Shishupal, but he had a obligation to Shishupal's mother. Shishupal was the son of Shrutakirti, who was a sister of Kunti. And so Shishupal was actually related quite intimately to Krishna. And he had made her a promise, because Shishupal was born rather weird. I think maybe you heard the story, I'm not sure. But he was born rather strangely. He had an extra set of arms and a very strange voice. He brayed like an ass. And he had a third eye, and he wasn't very attractive. And so his mother was very disturbed by it. And she heard a voice in the sky that said that the person who, when touched this boy will become normal, but that person will become responsible for the death of this boy. So, you know, she was taking him around, people were coming to visit, and finally Krishna and Balaram came. Krishna touched the boy sat on his lap, His arms disappeared, his eye disappeared, his strange voice disappeared. He became normal. But now it was known, this is going to be the person who kills my son. So she, because she was his aunt, she went to him and she said, Krishna, you know, I'm your aunt. You owe me something. Could you please don't kill my son? You know, mothers love their sons, even if their sons are a little rascally. So she begged him, and he said, "Okay, I'll allow him 100 offenses. And after I won't kill him for 100 offenses. I'll tolerate 100 offenses." So some say that during the Rajasuya sacrifice, while everybody was getting revved up, Krishna was just sitting there passively, but really he was just counting. 86, 87, 88, 89, 90, 91. So he was counting the offenses. When it got to 100, that was it. Choom, Sudarshan Chakra went, cut his head off. So Krishna honored his promise to his aunt. He also honored his promise to Shishupal that, okay, 3 births are up. You go back to the spiritual world. And because everybody was so angry at him for being so blasphemous, he also honored that feeling in them, and it appeared that he just got Sayuja liberation. But in actuality, because maybe they didn't know the history, I don't know if they were the appropriate chapters of Bhagavatam, but Shishupal was actually his devotee. So he went back to Godhead and resumed his natural position. Now, if we look at that whole string of things that Krishna did in that split second, right, in that small assembly, in that few minutes that Shishupal went on his tirade and started screaming and doing all these crazy things, we come back to the position of Sharanam, of getting to the point where we can come to Krishna and say, I want to take shelter of you. I want to put my head at your feet, and I just want to serve you. The desire of one who takes shelter is to please the other person. So bhakti for us, bhakti for the devotee who's taken shelter of Krishna means I want to serve Krishna. I want to please Krishna. That's the goal of my life. I want Krishna to feel inspired to offer me shelter. I don't want to just take. I want to give. Matter of fact, I want to give, and I don't even want to take. I just want to serve Krishna. So, and once that feeling is there, once bhakti is mixed in to the behavior of the devotee, even if the devotee appears like Shishupal did in a apparently inimical way, Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaka, these were nasty guys, right? But because in reality, they were acting out of devotion, right? They had asked for only 3 births because they didn't want to be far away from Krishna for longer. That was their inspiration. They said, okay, well, if we have to be away, I play the part of a demon and only go away for 3 births than stay away from you for longer. So they were deeply in their real spiritual being. They were devotees. They were moving in the realm of demonhood out of bhakti. Right? Out of bhakti. That's why they were there. So they inspired Krishna by that bhakti. They inspired Krishna to fight. Krishna didn't want to fight with ordinary people. He wouldn't fight, give all that energy to what to speak of chapters in the Bhagavatam to ordinary people. So he took the position of he had his devotees take that position of fighting with him, and he became inspired to help them out, ultimately to help them out of the material world and back to their own position. And with us also, when our behavior becomes infused with bhakti, then Krishna helps us out. Even if we don't do it well, even if we do bad things, even if we make mistakes, that's why he says apichet sudaracharo, right? Because if our intention is good, then Krishna will accept it even if it's imperfect. Just like a parent, Prabhupada gives the example of a child who offers the parent something. Someone was telling me yesterday, actually, Akuti got one too, some card from a grandchild, and the card says, So the person who was talking to me, she was saying, I got a card for my grandchild, and the card had coupons in it, and the coupon said, you can come play a game with me, you can come do a craft with me, you can come, et cetera, et cetera, watch a movie with me. So in other words, me, 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 you know, what I want to do, you can do it with me. What I'm enjoying, you can have come and enjoy it with me. But a devotee, so even when that is, it's not exactly the pinnacle of bhakti, but the parent is loves it, the grandparent, he loves it, that the child is thinking of me, he's offering something to me, it's just a small piece of paper or some little thing, but it's a sign of affection. And by that affection, I'm moved. So the devotee is moves Krishna by his affection. The example is given of Duryodhana. Right after this, we're going to see Duryodhana's true colors, because Duryodhana was assigned at the Rajasuya sacrifice. He was assigned to be in charge of the treasury. And so people were bringing all these gifts to Yudhisthira for the Rajasuya, and Duryodhana was getting more and more envious. He was already completely envious to the max. But besides the fact that he was already envious, the gifts, when he was seeing all the gold and all the homage that was being offered to Yudhisthira, he became completely overwhelmed. And then in the next chapter, you'll see, he goes walking through the palace. And when he goes through walking through the palace, he falls into what he thinks is land, and it turns out to be water, and he gets embarrassed. And that is the straw that breaks the camel's back. Then he decides, get it, I've had it with these people. It's over. So he becomes so envious, but he thinks, what I'm going to do, I'm going to get Krishna on my side. Huh? Krishna's going to come visit Hastinapura, I'm going to get him on my side. So he makes a whole big meal, he builds the whole palace for guests, he invites Krishna to come, and Krishna refuses to go anywhere near his palace. He doesn't want to eat, he doesn't have any appetite, he says it's not even healthy to eat in the house of an enemy, an enemy of my friends. So because you're an enemy of my friends, I'm not even going to go to your place. So then he's hungry, he hasn't eaten, right? He goes to Vidura's house. And Vidura hadn't planned he's coming. So he comes and he says, I'm really hungry. Is there something for me to eat? And Vidura's wife serves him. She says, well, there's bananas. Okay, I'll serve you bananas. So because she's so in love and so happy that Krishna actually came to her house, she offers him the bananas backwards. She unpeels the bananas and she throws the bananas away and she offers the peel. So Krishna doesn't say to her, listen, I know you're having a hard time because, you know, whatever. But really, I'd rather have the bananas, because who wants to eat banana peels anyway? So even the mouse, we have a mouse in our house, and one of the mice ate the banana. But even he threw away the peel and just ate the banana. But Krishna, he ate the banana peel. And he ate it willingly. He didn't even think about it. He didn't complain at all. He ate it because he was so appreciative of the love of Vidura's and his wife. So appreciative of their affection that it covered over a pretty big mistake, right? If you went over to someone's house to eat and they served you a pile of banana peels, you wouldn't be very happy. But he was very satisfied because that affection was there. We see it in Ram Lila also with Subari Muni. She was serving Ram pilu fruits, and she was afraid they were, when they're not ripe, they're very bad. They're hard and they're sour. So she was tasting them to make sure that they were sweet. And the sweetest ones, she would feed to him. And the other ones, she would throw away. So Ram was eating the remnants of this old lady, right? This old sadhu. He was eating what was coming out of her mouth. Even Lakshman tried to stop him. What are you doing? He said, but she's offering with devotion. How I cannot accept. So this is the power of bhakti. And Krishna tries to fire, or he acts in such a way as to fire up our bhakti by engaging in these kinds of pastimes. And if we analyze them carefully, we see all the different, like it's like a crossroads with all the different leelas meet together, And they all get satisfied by one action. You know, so many things that happened millennia ago, and things that are going to happen in two chapters. They all get tied up in a neat package in one action of Krishna. So Krishna wants to inspire us to surrender to him, or to take shelter of him, even more than surrender, to take shelter of him. Because when we take shelter of him, we become truly happy. And if we don't take shelter of him, we become miserable. Even though we're trying, no one wants to be miserable. Everyone's trying to be happy. Everyone's going out of their way trying to be calculating, looking at the stock market pages on the phone, on the internet, to try and be happy, buying a new house to be happy, doing everything to be happy. But if you try to be happy without taking shelter of Krishna, you will always be miserable. You will always be miserable. So Krishna wants us to be happy more than we want to be happy. And therefore, he goes out of his way to give us reasons to surrender to him. And we can see from the devotees who do surrender to him that there's such a wonderful reciprocation with Krishna, even with Putana, right? There's that wonderful verse from the third canto of the Srimad Bhagavatam, "Alas, how shall I take shelter of one more merciful than he who granted the position of mother to the she-demon Putana, although she was unfaithful and she prepared deadly poison to be sucked from her breast." So she wasn't even a devotee, and Krishna gave her the position of Maitri, of nurse. But look at Prahlad. Prahlad was a little boy, and he was being mistreated by his demoniac father, but he was completely devoted and completely had taken shelter of Krishna. And so therefore Krishna gave him complete shelter. So here we have an opportunity again to appreciate the wonderful reciprocation and the fantastic outcome that will be there for one who takes shelter of Krishna and who gives Krishna his desire to make him happy, who invests in Krishna the desire to see Krishna happy, to see Prabhupada happy. When we invest our desire to be happy in the Supreme Personality and the Godhead and his devotees, then we can truly become happy. And knowing that, Krishna gives us lots of different ways to become aware and responsive to his wonderful personality and his wonderful activities. So I'll stop there. And it's already 10 to 9. If there's any question, I can try to answer. Hare Krishna Janmasthami is always the first one.
in the purport that you, the last purport, he was always absorbed in thought of Krishna, and then he got salvation of Sayuja Mukti, merging into the existence of the Supreme, and finally became reinstated in his original position of personal mm-hmm. service. Now, sometimes, somewhere I've heard it, I'm not sure where I've read it, but that they had another birth as Jagai and Madai.
Right, because they wanted to see Chaitanya Leela.
Oh, that's right. Okay, so I guess the transition from the Sayuja Mukti includes that.
Yeah, I don't know where it falls in chronologically, but I mean, because Chaitanya Leela is relatively recent, so I would, my intelligence tells me they went back there and then came back here.
Or maybe they stayed merged until that time.
Pran Govinda is going to shed some light on it. Yes. Right.
Give a vast explanation.
What does he say?
Prabhupada says even in Bhagavad Gita, in the purport, Prabhupada put Mukti Pradata Sarvesham Vishnu Revana Sangsaya. So according to that verse, that Vishnu when kills somebody, is supposed to be liberated. But how is that Ravana get killed? He's not liberated. He's coming back again. Hiranyakashipu coming as a Ravana coming. Where is the liberation part? Then the Shastra is kind of a confronting. So Srila Prabhupada gave an analogy about Parashar Muni Maitreya Muni speaking to Parashar, and where Parashar Muni elaborated that, for an example, it's a vast purport, but one example, like when Hiranyakashipu was touched by the Lord Nrisimhadev feeling. As a touching, he got enough Sukriti that he enjoyed more than demigod as a Ravana. But because he did not recognize Lord as a Vishnu, he did not get liberation, according to Prabhupada's translation. Commentary of Anubhashya, Bhaktisiddhanta Thakur says, Mahaprabhu was so merciful that, the conclusion of that purport is that it is not that Prabhupada says that a devotee has to wait millennium after millennium to wait here for Lord to perform. So original Joy Bijoy, they did consecutive three life and immediately left. And also Joy Bijoy, Ravana, Kumbhakarna, these are also position, post, that day the Lord comes and some living entity enter into that. So not then Prabhupada write, this Shishupal may not be original Shishupal according to this. The Shishupal is another demon who took birth.
But that's not what Prabhupada says here.
No, I mean 536. If we put it out, we can see that.
I know, but that's not what he says here. I'm just saying that's not what he says.
I understand. So we have to reconcile both in a sense. And then Anubhashya says that Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, out of his compassionate nature, invited all of them to come. Like Kamsa also came as a Chantaji to get love of God. So that's how it is.
But Jai and Vijay, the two drunkards, they got a different kind of mercy than Chankazi did. You know, I mean, I guess Chankazi also got pretty intimate mercy, but yeah, he got love of God. But they got into go into Shiva Sangam. Yes.
Krishna. So this is 536 that he was talking about. So Adi 536. Nevertheless, because Hiranyakashipu was killed by the hands of Lord Nrisimhadev, in his next life he became Ravan and had proprietorship of unlimited opulence. As Ravan, with unlimited material enjoyment, he could not accept Lord Ram as the personality of Godhead. Therefore, even though he was killed by Ram, he did not attain Sayujya or oneness with the body of the Lord. In his Ravan body, he was too much attracted to Ram's wife Janaki, and because of that attraction, he was able to see Lord Ram. But instead of accepting Lord Ram as an incarnation of Vishnu, Ravana thought him as an ordinary living being. When killed by the hands of Ram, therefore, he got the privilege of taking birth as Shishupal, who had such immense opulence that he could think himself a competitor of Krishna. Although Shishupal was always envious of Krishna, he frequently uttered the name of Krishna and always thought of the beautiful features of Krishna. Thus, by constantly thinking and chanting of Krishna, even unfavorably, he was cleansed of the contamination of his sinful activities. When Shishupal was killed by the Sudarshan Chakra of Krishna as an enemy, his constant remembrance of Krishna dissolved the reactions of his vices, and he attained salvation by becoming one with the body of the Lord.
Right. And here he says that, Prabhupada says that he became one with the body of the Lord, and then he went back to his original position. Maybe. That's speculation, but it's maybe. Anybody else? Okay, thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hare Krishna.